Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It is 5 o'clock, which means it's time for Chad Withrow, presented by A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa. Chad, first of all, before we get into anything about the Titans, congratulations. We've made it because college football kicks off tomorrow afternoon.
11 a.m. Central Time, Jared. 11 a.m. Central Time is a high holy day and a high holy moment for all of us that have waited all offseason for some sort of meaningful football. So when Florida State and Georgia Tech kick off from Dublin, Ireland at that time, it's going to be a special time for all of us. Congratulations to you, too, as well, for making it through this long offseason. I, for one, cannot wait.
By the way, do you think that's a good enough game, Georgia Tech, Florida State?
No, of course not. But neither was Notre Dame Navy. Neither was Nebraska Northwestern. I'm trying to think of the other Ireland kickoff games.
The problem is you're not going to get somebody good. Like you're not going to get like Georgia to go over to Ireland.
I would love it, you know. And I get why it doesn't happen because you know people don't want to play that early week and all that. But if we could just get two games, it doesn't have to be you know LSU USC in Vegas. Or what that first week is now with a lot of good, you know, cross-conference matchups. Where before, the first week was nothing. No good games. Now there's a lot of them. I would love to give it one more good game. I'd like to elevate Georgia Tech, Florida State, which, by the way, isn't terrible. I think it's like a 12-point line, and that line's actually gone down. I'd like to get one that's a little bit better than that and just get two of them. If we could get one at 11 a.m. or noon or whatever and one late afternoon or night, that is just like that game. That's all I ask for. I'm not being greedy. I would just love to get one more game that everyone can tune into and watch in that week zero. Because right now, you know, it's New Mexico and Hawaii and teams like that that are playing in the first week. Other than that one somewhat big game. It's also weird that it's a conference game to start. I thought it was weird when it was Northwestern Nebraska in a Big Ten game in week zero also. It should be a non-conference game and give me one more and then I'll be even happier.
Let's get to the Titans. They wrap up the preseason at New Orleans on Sunday. Brian Callahan says the starters are going to play, and I think they need to because the offense has been dreadful in training camp as of late. Yesterday, they did not move the football in the two-minute drill at all against the starting defense. They didn't move the football at all against the Seattle starting defense other than the, well, that one running play at the beginning of practice would have been pretty good against the Seahawks. How nervous are you about the Titans offense and how important is it for them to look competent on Sunday at New Orleans?
I think it's somewhat important for them to look like a team that's understanding Callahan's offense. Here, I think we undervalued all offseason, Jared. We knew the upgrades with talent on this roster and we've seen it and they have gotten better from a talent standpoint. And J.C. Latham hopefully is going to be the left tackle for the Titans for the next 10 years and be great and all of those things. We know the issue at right tackle. I think what maybe, and I can't speak for everyone, what I undervalued is the adjustment to Brian Callahan's offense and the adjustment for Will Levis to a new offense and Brian Callahan's offense. So while bringing in a Tyler Boyd, who we know because of his time in Cincinnati, is a perfect fit for this offense, having the one player piece that comes in and have them in the offense doesn't necessarily guarantee that you're going to have a ton of success because everyone else has to adjust too. And then the other pieces you brought in have to fit perfectly and have to understand Brian Callahan's offense. And there's not as much time to get used to new offense or defense in the NFL. I don't think they put as much emphasis on, obviously they don't in preseason games, but even the amount of time they have practicing and all that, It's going to be a tough adjustment. I think that's what this offensive preseason has taught me about the Titans. They're not going to come out of the gate swinging. They're not going to come out like Ken Wisenhunt's offense did with Marcus Mariota against Tampa Bay in that opener against Jameis Winston that one year. I think this is going to be tough to watch, quite frankly, for the first part of the season until they really start to get in a groove offensively, which you hope happens at some point.
Do you think this fan base will flip on Levis if things don't start off well?
I think no. I think the power of positivity with this fan base is huge. And I think that because of that, they will not be quick to flip on anyone this season. I do think that people are overly optimistic about this Titans team and not being very realistic about them. So there will be some that say, oh, this isn't what I thought it was going to look like. Now I'm going to bail on expectations. But I think it's more of just a reality check than anything else. I don't think people are going to turn on them as much as they're going to turn back to being realist and understanding that this is year one for a new coach that's bringing in a completely different offense. This really is kind of Will Levis's first year also in some ways, because it's his first year with the offense and his first year coming into the season as the starter. So I think people will be quick to go to be more realistic about this Titans team and not as overly optimistic.
TD said on the show, and I don't want to misquote him, but he said something, there's going to be an ESPN story that comes out with the value of the money the Titans spent in the offseason and what it means they should do in terms of winning and losing. And I believe TD said that the floor for this team should be 9 wins this season. Forget about the money and the numbers and the things like that. I mean, I think he's using kind of history and math to give him that 9-win number. I think 9 wins would be great for this team. I think the idea that, you know, that 9 wins should be what they do, to me, might be a little strong given where I think they are right now.
Well, look, the league is set up for everyone to have 9 wins or 8 wins.
Right.
Right? So let's start there. If you're doing your job, you should have 8 or 9 wins. But there's also different parts of the process for different teams. There are teams coming into the season, I'll throw New England as one of them. They don't want to win 8 or 9 games this year. Right? They want to win less than that because they want to have a high draft pick next year, and they know that they're starting a new process of building a team back up. So they don't want to be in the middle of the pack. So I don't. If for TD to say, you know, the floor is what 8 wins or 9 wins, I mean, I think that's fair. But there's an obvious floor that's lower than that if they have bad injury issues like they've had in the past. That goes without saying for every team across the league. But you know, it's the NFL. Like, it's really difficult. We had Jim Nagy on yesterday, the head of the Reese's Senior Bowl, and he talked about being really good friends with Reggie Cobb, the former Tennessee running back and NFL running back, and they were scouts together. And Reggie Cobb talked about a season with Rich Kotite in the New York Jets where they went 1-15. And Reggie Cobb told him, you got to work real hard to go 1-15 in the NFL. That's really difficult to do. We were trying to go 1-15. We didn't want to win more games than that. So it's difficult to be really bad in the NFL. I think it's difficult to be really good. I think it's difficult to be really bad. So, you know, putting an expectation around 500 is kind of the easy way out, but it's also probably the right way to do it.
Do you think that this, Chad Withrow with us on the program, do you think that this Titans defense is going to be good enough? We've seen them, I guess, dominate in practice, but who knows if that's bad offense or good defense. Do you think there's a chance it's good enough when L'Jarius Sneed and Chidobe Awuzie get in there that they could carry the team for the first half of the season until the offense starts to click?
No, I don't. I think there's going to be an adjustment for the defense also. Now, here's one that I'll throw in that I think could change the course of things for the Titans. If Tavondre Sweat is great, and I mean great, as a rookie, where he completely adds a different element to the defense in terms of pressure up the middle, run-stuffing ability, all of those things, then I think, yeah, they could be good enough to – they're going to keep the Titans in the game. They could be good enough to win games with the defense if that's the case. But I think that's a big if to start his career that way. So I'm going to say no.
See, I worry that if that's not the case, then this team could be in trouble. Because this is the thing. Again, I know it's just 2 two-minute drills. But they went the 2 minute against the Seattle Ones. Levis threw one pass and it got intercepted. They went 2 minute yesterday against the Ones and Levis and company were terrible and did not move the ball. And then they went against the second team and supposedly, according to Paul, I wasn't there, but Paul said they moved the football against the second team thanks to penalties and they got a long field goal out of it. That's bad. But then I'm told, like, oh, no, it doesn't matter because it's practice, Jared. And I'm like, right, but that's all we have to go off of. And it makes me worry that when the offense goes up against a NFL defense, that they're not very good, and that is a huge concern for me if the defense can't be dominant to keep them in these games.
Yeah, and for those that say it's just practice, Jared, I mean, unless the Titans are holding back, you know, 17 different trick plays they're going to run over the course of an NFL game, then what we're seeing in practice, especially with the joint work with the Seahawks, or what we're seeing in preseason games when the starters are in, and that's a little bit of what we're going to see in the regular season, at least early on. I mean, I get that flip, there's a switch once the season starts. And I understand that once you get to the regular season, everyone's going to be a little bit different. But all we have to go on right now is practice. And I think there's plenty of reasons to be somewhat concerned about Will Levis. There's a lot of reasons to be concerned about the offense. And I think the defense, while it should be pretty good and improved from last year, and the pass rush should be better and all those things, they're really relying on some new additions and a rookie in T'Vondre Sweat to be special early on if you think that defense is going to carry them.
Is there anything to make of the problems between Calvin Ridley and Will Levis, or is that going to work itself out by the time they play real football?
So, separate of just that individual personality issue or whatever is going on there, like who's going to listen to Will Levis right now? Like who comes into a room and is like, yeah, this is our leader, this is the guy. I really want to get on the same page with him. I don't know who that is. I don't think they're outright disrespecting Will Levis or anything, but Calvin Ridley's a guy who had no problem saying he didn't run hard in a practice against the Seahawks at some point. So I say that not to crush Will Levis or belittle him or anything. Jared, I just don't know. I mean, it would be one thing if it was an established guy like even a Ryan Tannehill, who had been around a year, been around the locker room, and, you know, guys respected him, even if he wasn't the most vocal dude. They knew how he went about his business, so people wanted to get on the same page with him. I don't know what the motivation is to get on the same page with Will Levis other than selfishly wanting to get the football. I don't really know Will Levis as a leader that much. I saw his Mayo commercial. That was funny. I haven't seen enough of him to know how he's going to lead. I know he's a fiery personality, so it's difficult to say exactly if I'm worried or not, if it says more about Calvin Ridley or about Will Levis, or if it's much ado about nothing.
Mm-hmm. Chad Withrow with us on the program. The Hot Seat is coming up next. Stillman and Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman and Company on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Chad Withrow with us from A Moment's Peace Salon and Day Spa. Chad, do you want to get right to the hot seat, or do you have a thought?
Let's get right to the hot seat.
Okay, number one, how much do you value what starters do in the preseason?
I mean, I value whether or not they play. That tells me a lot about what the teams think about their team going into the season if they play more than others. So if you're playing in the preseason, it's because you need the work and you need to get something done and accomplished, and the coaching staff needs to see you play. So my answer to that is absolutely I value what they do in the preseason. Because why? Because the coaching staff values it because they're playing. If starters are playing more in the preseason than other team starters, that's showing you they need further evaluation of their roster and their starters. If a team loves where they are at quarterback and just doesn't want to get them hurt, like the New York Jets or other teams across the league, and they don't need to see their starters much, that shows you they pretty much know what they have. If the starters are playing more than not, that shows you they don't know what they have. So, yes, I value what I see from starters in the preseason.
Okay, number two. If Tennessee were to open the season in Dublin, Ireland, the way that Florida State and Georgia Tech will tomorrow, what is the dream opponent for you to see Tennessee in Dublin?
Notre Dame. Playing Notre Dame in Ireland, where you have so many Irish fans, obviously, I think would be really cool. I mean, it could be kind of, first off, a ton of Tennessee fans would go. I know the number's like 10 or 15,000 Florida State fans that are there. So you'd have a lot of Tennessee fans that would make the trip to Ireland. But Tennessee versus Notre Dame in Ireland would be cool. I've actually, today on the show, I put out my preseason college football playoff pick, And I've got Tennessee as the 11th seed in the playoff at Notre Dame as the 6th seed in the first round of the college football playoff this year. So it could be a dream matchup in the playoff. It would certainly be a dream matchup in Dublin, Ireland. I'd love to see it.
You know, we're going to have to do that on the show next week, like the Friday before the start of college football is usually the Stillman and Company expectations for college football. And I'm like, God, it's going to be so much harder to pick 12 teams than it is to do the four that we normally do.
Think about all the 9-3 teams, just real quick on that. That's what I had a hard time with. Think of all the possible 9-3 teams in the Big Ten and the SEC, and then try to whittle that down, because there's probably going to be a 9-3 team or two in the playoff in one of those two conferences based on how tough their schedules are. So trying to figure that out. I mean, Tennessee could lose at Oklahoma, lose to Georgia, lose to Alabama, and beat everyone else, which they're going to be favored in every other game, and get in the college football playoff. It's not guaranteed that way. If they go 10-2, it's guaranteed. So that's what's hard to predict and pick, are all those teams you bunch together that are going to be around 8-4, 9-3, and trying to pick 3-4 SEC and Big Ten teams from that group.
Speaking of Florida State, Florida State is currently negotiating its exit from the ACC. Mediation between the two was unsuccessful. Florida State estimates that it will owe the ACC under the current agreement over $500 million to leave the conference. Chad Withrow, where is Florida State trying to go?
Anywhere but the ACC. It's two places. It's the SEC or the Big Ten. They take either. I think Clemson's kind of, they're a little bit more passive about it, but they're kind of in the same boat.
But the SEC has made it abundantly clear they're not interested in Florida State.
Yeah, I mean, but when has Greg Sankey really been clear on anything when it comes to that?
I know, but Feinbaum is like,
if it came down to them or the Big Ten, don't you think they would take them before the Big Ten would? If it was a competition and one was going to possibly pass the other?
I don't think the SEC would view Florida State as a losing element if they ended up in the Big Ten.
I think the SEC wants North Carolina. I don't think North Carolina is as motivated right now to leave for whatever reason. I think North Carolina is a valuable, valuable property for the Big Ten or the SEC.
The problem is that North Carolina is going to make you take NC State and Duke with them.
That's what I always heard about Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Also, if someone took them. I say that there's no rules. Like, these charters amongst the states and, you know, Washington leaving Washington State behind, which is a big legal battle.
UCLA and Cal was a big one.
I mean, they do whatever they want, but for football. It's all for football. It's all for football TV. And schools can just do whatever they want and make up their own rules. So I get what you're saying. I just don't think any of that applies. I don't think they're going to have to take Duke and NC State with them or Wake Forest or anyone else. I think North Carolina is going to eventually do whatever they need to do for survival and to thrive. And North Carolina is a school that's going to be in a position to thrive, not just survive. So they're going to go where they need to. That's going to be the best financial situation. I think the SEC, if they're approached with either add these teams or they're going to go to the Big Ten and then the Big Ten is going to be more valuable than you, I don't think they're going to allow that. They'll try to add them too. The one thing I believe the SEC believes is that they are big on everyone being in a contiguous state to the other one. So not having that geographic spread like the Big Ten from coast to coast, I think they are serious about that. It has to be in an SEC state or bordering one to be on there. They don't want to skip states and go long distances to add teams to the conference. And clearly the Big Ten doesn't care about that at all.
Neither does the ACC with the addition of Stanford and
correct
Cal as, and SMU as far as that is concerned. Okay. What is your expectation for Nick Saban on College Game Day?
He's going to be awesome. I have no doubt about it. The dude is as polished as they come. He is going to be incredible. And Jared, everything he says on College Game Day is going to be news. When he has an actual opinion or he's critical of a coach or a program or a player or anything, it is going to be written about by a lot of different websites. It's going to be newsmaking every single week. I can't wait. I think he's going to be awesome on College Game Day. And it's the perfect spot for him. It's the perfect addition for ESPN.
So are there going to be too many people on the set, you know, with Saban on that? Or is this going to be, you know, they kind of got rid of David Pollack last year and maybe they get rid of somebody else? Because I don't know about you, but there's too many people. I want to hear Saban talk. I don't want to hear some of these other guys talk.
Yeah, if they get rid of anybody, I hope it's Desmond Howard.
Me too.
Just personally. I don't think he offers nearly as much as anyone else. Pat McAfee is a change of pace. Kirk Herbstreit's great. He was the best part of it for years and years. He needs to stay. I think Reese Davis is an excellent host. Lee Corso's not going to do much. You know, he's done less and less every year, so he'll just be on a few segments, so that's not going to overly crowd everything. I'm with you. I want to hear more of Saban than Desmond Howard. So, you know, and I thought David Pollack was fine. So if they're willing to get rid of David Pollack, maybe they make a move with that, you know, outside analyst part with Desmond Howard. But it's still going to be a good show. I mean, I think that's one of the more well-produced shows in sports television, has been for years. And Nick Saban's only going to add to it.
Okay, what did you think of Netflix's Steve McNair documentary?
I thought it was a well-produced, slick, Netflix-produced story about Steve McNair and the murder. It had the footage of the investigators' interviews with Neely and Big Daddy Gaddy and everyone else. I thought it was well put together. It's one of the more well-produced pieces on Steve McNair I've seen. There's no new information in it. For everyone who lived through it, and I mean, I was right next to the crime scene reporting for a different radio station at that time, so I've lived through it. I was at Ronald Surpass's press conference announcing that it was a murder-suicide. I was looking for myself in the documentary there. There's nothing new about it, but it is very well done. I thought Jeff Fisher was very dramatic, but that's who he is when he's telling stories. I thought he did a really good job in it. I was impressed.
Might have also bent the truth a little bit, but that's...
Yeah, I mean, look, it's...
par for the course with Jeff Fisher.
He's a good storyteller, right? Like, he's a great storyteller.
Keyword being story, but yes.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. It was well produced, but no new information at all. But I think Titans fans will enjoy it. They'll look back at Steve McNair.
I think the thing we have to remember is that, like, that documentary is not for us. So, like, as much as it's like you're saying no new information or whatever, like, the average person living in Idaho probably doesn't know as much about the Steve McNair murder as, like, we do that saw, like, I don't say saw it, but saw everything that happened when it all happened.
Yeah, and here's what I really enjoy about it. It's more the Brad Hopkins is a part of it and other former Titans, but it's a look back at that 99 season. They really go in depth with that and what Nashville was like when the team moved here and the reaction of players and coaches at that point, that it was like Nashville's a cow town when they got here. There's nothing to do. Downtown was nothing. And their reaction moving from Houston to Nashville was like, what have we gotten ourselves into? What is this exactly? And how that 99 season galvanized everyone and how big of a part of that Steve McNair was. So that was really cool to watch. I mean, all the murder stuff, that's the juicy stuff that Netflix wants. And that you're right. Someone in Idaho or Montana knows nothing about that story. We know everything about it. That was the least interesting piece of the documentary to me. The football stuff and the way it was produced, that was the most compelling part.
What do you remember the most about covering the Steve McNair murder?
Well, I was downtown to watch fireworks already. And my phone starts blowing up, and you get word that something's happened with Steve McNair, that there's a murder downtown, it's possibly Steve McNair. And then I get called to go call in reports before before the tailgating started for the fireworks. We got down there early. And I walk right up to the old radio station, and I'm doing reports on Steve McNair. I just remember more than anything that day. That was one of the first, like, viral moments, I think. You know, this was pre-Twitter, probably, or maybe right in the beginning. But it was one where people were texting each other about it in 2009. Everyone was talking about it in Nashville. You look down, you got 37 missed text messages because it was such a big story. And being right there next to it, the amount of people who just showed up in Steve McNair jerseys to the crime scene and the cops having to get people away from the actual condo because of that. It was a wild day and something I'll always remember.
What did you make of Joe Rexroad and Paul Kaharsky screaming at each other this morning?
I thought it was, and having worked with Paul a long time, I thought it was Paul kind of at his best. Of needling someone. I thought it was very funny by him giving the definition of what a rant is to Joe. was very funny. I just dropped my daughters off at school and was driving back and heard them yelling at each other, and it was quite entertaining. I think, you know, point Paul on it, because and I certainly don't always agree with Paul in every argument. I've been a part of many of them with him, but wasn't much of a rant as much as instructions from Joe on high school football. And by the way, I agree with everything you said about high school football and everything that goes along with it.
And you are a high school football purist.
What now?
You are a high school football purist.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that? I don't know anything about high school football anymore.
Really?
Like, the moment that I stopped hosting that show.
You did that show for like 20 years.
I was watching a game last night. I'll still watch some of it. I don't know any of these coaches. I don't know anything. It's amazing how out of sight, out of mind it is. I still love it, and I'll catch a game when I can. I'm going to go to the DCA game tonight because that's where my daughters go to school. But I don't know anything about it. I don't know what's going on with different teams, with different coaches. And Jared, 6 years ago, I could have told you every coach in the Mid-State. If you gave me a school, I could probably tell you the coach at that school. I'm still pretty good with mascots and colors, but I don't know who's coaching what school, and I know nothing about the players anymore.
That is wild to me. I remember when you and Mayor Cooper got into it during the COVID year. I mean, that was some serious heat back in the day.
Well, I remember way back in the day, you know, James Franklin would take a helicopter to go recruit, and he'd call my high school football show each week and check in on where he was going, which was brilliant by him. I mean, it's amazing how little I know now. Like, and that goes with anything. You know, the brain can only process like so much at a time.
Sure.
And you can only really know so many people at a time, is what I've read somewhere. Again, I don't know, because my brain can only process so much at once. High school football is one of those things that, while I still love and appreciate it, the moment that I moved on from it, it was dead to me in my brain. It's like it's a part of my life. I can remember doing it, but I can't remember specifics about it.
Well, you brought up the flying around on the helicopter. It made me think of Rudy Kalis back in the day when Rudy used to take the helicopter on Channel 4.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think Rudy still keeps up with high school football in the Mid-State or no?
No way.
No shot, Rudy.
No chance. Rudy Kalis knows anything about high school football. Those high school football TV shows locally were always so much fun when I was growing up, and even watching it when I'd record it and get home from our high school football radio show. It was so much fun to watch that. I can pretty much guarantee you that if you said like a player, you know, like Patrick Turner is a good example. When I started in radio, Patrick Turner was the guy.
Good pasture. Yeah.
And Philip Fulmer in Tennessee were after him, and then he goes to USC as a wide receiver. But that's a name, if you tell him, like, I remember covering Patrick Turner. Golden Tate. You know, I covered Golden Tate at Pope John Paul II. There are guys I remember talking about a lot in high school football that went on to play in the NFL or big college stars that I'll always remember. But outside of that, it's a black hole, man. It's a blank spot in my brain.
Chad Withrow. He will be out, though, according to him, at the DCA game tonight. So I guess so. That's what you're now a DCA fan. You've gone from
You know, say hello. I'm a DCA fan because I pay them. Usually works the other way. People pay you and then you're a fan of them. But I am a DCA fan because I pay them, because that's where my kids go to school. And I will be watching DCA and Ezel Harding tonight. Big Joe is a DCA family also on the morning show with you guys. So I'm looking forward to it, man. Football is here, Jared. We got high school football tonight. We got a college game tomorrow. We got about three or four other games no one cares about tomorrow. But then starting next Thursday night, we're here. We've made it through the long, dark desert of no football season, and we have arrived.
Please, and I hope you take this seriously, please follow the guidelines of the Joe Rexroad High School Football Decorum Handbook.
I will not be yelling at any coaches. I will not be yelling at any players. This is my Joe Rexroad oath that he listed today. I won't be yelling at the referees. Yeah, I'm not going to be doing any of that. I swear to Joe that I will be doing none of those things. And congratulations to Paul on, I thought, getting the best of that argument this morning.
Yeah, well, you know, Joe's on my list because he was saying that I was too afraid to go on the show with him while I was on Sirius XM, hosting, working Joe, but make of that what it is.
I really miss Jared versus Joe when it doesn't happen.
Well, it'll be happening from now until, I don't know, probably around December 20th.
Yeah, well,
for a little bit.
It happened this past week.
It did not. It did not. I was in Canada.
It's a huge disappointment when I'm in my truck at that time of day and it doesn't happen. So let's get back to it, boys.
Chad Withrow, as always, joining us on the program from Outkick. Enjoy the game. Chad, we'll talk soon.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Yep. It's become a weekly thing. The pre-New Orleans 53-man roster. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll do it next. Stillman & Company, 102.5, 106.3 the game.
How many roster spots do you think are up for grabs here with a couple of days to go?
And then traditionally, there's probably four or five real spots up for grabs that are being competed for. And it's pretty standard every year, I think. You're always looking. It's always those last four to six players, depending on position. And so those are the things that we'll be really keyed in on over this last game here and getting ready to make decisions. Again, special teams plays a huge role in all that too.
Okay, so that was Brian Callahan. And Brian Callahan says, yeah, you know, there's probably some spots that are still up for grabs in the New Orleans game. Probably about four of them or so, and, you know, who knows. Now, let me say this. I think they probably have a good idea as to who is going to make this team. I think they probably feel pretty comfortable about it. But I'm not convinced there's 53 guys on this team that I would say, oh my God, they have to have them. And I hope the Titans feel the same way, because what that would then allow them to do is to claim other players and not feel bad about it. Not feel bad about, oh gosh, we want to claim this tackle who could be our swing tackle, but we don't want to lose this guy. You know, that is something that I hope they at least are thinking, at least on the same line as I am. So here you go. This is the pre-New Orleans 53-man roster. There are some changes from last week, which we'll get to. Quarterback, 3, Levis, Rudolph, Willis. Now, some of you guys are trying to talk me into this idea that the Titans would be better off keeping one of these guys that are one of the 4 or 5 as opposed to keeping Malik on the roster, and I just don't think that's the case. Again, I look at it like this. I think every team in the NFL needs to have a third quarterback, and Malik's money is fully guaranteed, so why not just leave Malik on the team? And I think that's what they're going to do. So I think it will be 3. Again, Levis, Rudolph, Willis. Running back, 3. Spears, Pollard, and Haskins. Again, they said they're going to keep 3. I would keep 2. Because I try to get Haskins or Chestnut to the practice squad. They're not going to do that. So because of that, I think they keep the better back. It's Haskins. The more reliable back is Chestnut. But I think they'll keep Haskins, who's probably a more dynamic special teams player than Chestnut. So Spears, Pollard, and Haskins. Receiver. We have gone 7 every time we've done this. Receiver. 6. Hopkins, Ridley, Boyd, Burks, NWI, and Jaquan Jackson. I think all 6 guys are locks to make the team. I don't think there is really any question at all as to if those guys are going to make it. The only thing I could see is if the Titans were to pull off a, you know, Burks trade similar to the Jahan Dotson trade from yesterday, which I don't think they're going to do. And so Mason Kinsey, who has been on the roster the last couple of weeks, Mason Kinsey is off the roster. I just think that they can probably slip him through to the practice squad, and I think Jaquan Jackson's going to be the punt returner, so that opens up a spot. Hopkins, Ridley, Boyd, Burks, and NWI and Jackson. Tight end, 4. This hasn't changed. Okonkwo, Wiley, Vanette, and David Martin Robinson. By the way, I have a bone to pick with Paul and Joe from earlier today talking about Dilly said that David Martin Robinson's going to be better than Chicken Josh Wiley. I said it wouldn't be a surprise if that was the case. And it is not because I think David Martin Robinson, whoa, look at what he's doing in these preseason games. It's that I think Chig sucks and Wiley's always hurt. And I stand by that. Offensive line, as of now, 8. J.C. Latham, Peter Skoronski, Lloyd Cushenberry, Dylan Radins, Nicholas Petit-Frere, a.k.a. P.T., Andrew Rupchich, Jaron Christian, and Daniel Brunskill. And Jaron Christian, definitely a question mark. Brian Callahan asked about the swing tackle yesterday, talked about Jalen Duncan. If Jalen Duncan is this team's swing tackle, then, ladies and gentlemen, we're in some trouble. Like, I'm just telling you right now, if he's the swing tackle, then this football team is in some serious trouble. Defensive line, 4. Last week we had 5, but I've decided Quentin Bohanna is not going to make it. Simmons Sweat, Joseph Day, and Keandre Coburn. Everybody else is all the same. They can get them through to the practice squad, and thus they will, and call somebody up for the New Orleans game. And then maybe if there's an injury or something like that, they will make the decision to put somebody on the active roster if they go ahead and IR somebody else. Outside linebacker, 5. So we had 4 plus Arden Key's suspension. Well, now we have 5 because Arden Key, according to Jeffrey Simmons, is supposedly not going to be suspended. Landry, Key, Weaver, Harrell, and Shane Ray. And I just, the other guys, you know, they're not doing enough out there to earn a spot. And Shane Ray is a question mark at best. But I think that they brought him in for a reason. And so I think they're going to put Shane Ray on the football team. So again, Landry, Key, Weaver, Harrell, and Ray. Inside linebacker, 5. Murray Gibbons Campbell, James Williams, the former Miami safety they've converted to linebacker. TD talked me into that yesterday. You know, TD says he thinks he's making the team. He thinks he's taking people's heads off. He thinks he's this, that, the other. And so because of that, and again, it wasn't like TD thought that he was going to, you know, be a Pro Bowl or anything like that. But I was like, so you think he's making the team? And TD said, yeah, that's enough for me. James Williams over Otis Reese. And I have Cedric Gray on the team, but I have a question mark next to him because I do wonder if you're the Titans, do you think about going the IR route when it comes to Cedric Gray? Do you think about it? And I say think about it because, well, he hasn't done, I haven't noticed him one time. It's like I said to TD yesterday, I don't even know what number he wears because he's done so little. But he was picked in the 4th round, and you got to be Des Fitzpatrick bad to get cut. And let me just give a word of advice to the Rancarthon, Chad Brinker group, you know, whatever. Let me just give a word of advice if they want to hear it. Don't cut that 4th round pick because it will bring Amy back to the things that she didn't like about John Robinson, and you don't want to do that. So just trust me on that, and don't jump in and cut your 4th-round pick, even though the guy, shockingly, has not done anything. Corner. I have 7, but I have one controversial one. Sneed, Awuzie, McCreary, Brownlee, Judy Lolly, Avery, and I have Farley, because Farley's got guaranteed money no matter what. But I don't know if Farley actually can make this team. So as of now, I guess I have Farley, but let's see if he plays in the Saints game. And if he doesn't play in the Saints game, it wouldn't surprise me if they IR'd Farley and he just took another redshirt year and they tried one day to put it together. But he's got real guaranteed money. And so I could see them saying, well, if we think we can get him on the field at some point this year and he can help us, let's go ahead and not eat the cash. But, whew. Safety, 5. This, I think, is pretty straightforward. Hooker, Adams, Diggs, Molden, Jackson. And that's Matthew Jackson, who's had some interceptions at the beginning of training camp. Got to give him his due. Got to give him his credit. And specialist, 3. Nick Folk, Ryan Stonehouse, and Morgan Cox. No, the guy that hit the 59-yarder is not making the team. Now, I have circled 5 guys. Haskins, Rupchich, Ray, Jackson, and Farley. And the reason I circle those 5 guys is because I would not hesitate to get rid of any of those guys if it meant I could claim a better player, particularly one who plays on the offensive line. So I'm not saying, oh, God, we can't afford to lose it. No, you can afford to lose Rupchich. It's not going to be the end of the world. Probably get all those guys through to the practice squad anyway. So the current 53, Levis, Rudolph, Willis, Spears, Pollard, Haskins, Hopkins, Ridley, Boyd, Burks, NWI, and Jaquan Jackson, Okonkwo, Wiley, Vanette, David Martin, Robinson, Latham, Skoronski, Cushenberry, Radins, PT, Rupchich, Christian, and Brunskill, Simmons, Sweat, Joseph Day, and Coburn, Landry, Key, Weaver, Harrell, and Ray, Murray, Gibbons, Campbell, Williams, and Gray, Sneed, Awuzie, McCreary, Brownlee, Judy Lolly, Avery, and Farley, Hooker, Adams, Diggs, Molden, Jackson, Folk, Stonehouse, and Morgan Cox. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. It is a Fireball Hot Take Friday. One more preseason game to go. And then we have one little off week, and we can stand one off week, and then we're home free. Stillman and Company, 1025-106 for the game. Okay, we've made it, folks. College football weekend starts tomorrow. And I know it's only one game, and it's Georgia Tech, Florida State. Florida State's a top 10 team, so it's not a terrible game. But it kind of hit me this morning when I was thinking about the start of college football season, and I'm very excited. I know Caroline says I hate college football. Caroline's wrong. I just don't care about recruiting classes for 2027 like Caroline does. So I don't hate it. I just don't care that much. And I think there's a big difference between the two. I care when the games are on. And so tomorrow, I will watch the game. But I was thinking about the excitement of it, right? College football's back, and, you know, this year, who's going to make the playoff? And everything all kind of hit me at once. This is a new era of college football. Florida State is ranked 10th. And 10th, while it's certainly nothing to scoff at, 10th was not that big of a deal 5 years ago. 10th now means you're in the playoff. Everybody's going to make the playoff. It's like Chad Withrow said about trying to go through the Big Ten and SEC schools and who's going to be a 9-3 team that makes the playoffs and who's going to be a 9-3 team that misses the playoffs. This is a totally different ballgame than what we're used to in college football. Just like when they used to let the AP decide who the national championship was a totally different ballgame than the BCS. And then the other thing that hit me was tomorrow when College Game Day starts, I think it starts at 8 a.m. tomorrow, although you might want to check that, I'm not totally sure. Nick Saban will be at the desk. Now, I know Nick Saban retired. I know they hired Kalen DeBoer. That's a very good hire. And I know I've seen the pictures of Kalen DeBoer having modernized Nick Saban's office. It looked like grandma's house. And now all of a sudden, it looks kind of like a more modern, is the right way to say it, a more modern head coach's office. But Nick Saban is going to be on the desk tomorrow on College Game Day, which means Nick Saban is not going to be on the sideline coaching college football. I'm not an Alabama fan, though I don't root against Alabama. I don't necessarily root for Alabama, but I do root for Nick Saban. And I've always rooted for Nick Saban. And one of the reasons that I've always rooted for Nick Saban is because the couple of times that I've spent time with Coach Saban when I was with Floyd or when Coach Saban called after Floyd passed away, like, I really enjoyed the guy that Nick Saban is, and it made me want to root for him. So while college football is completely unrecognizable to what it was 5 years ago, we pay the players now. They can transfer wherever they want to go with no penalty. We got 12 teams getting in the playoffs. The Pac-12 doesn't exist anymore. We're going to have 12 teams again in the playoff. The one thing that stood out to me that I was like, wow, this makes me feel a certain way was the fact that Nick Saban is not going to be on the sidelines this year. Ladies and gentlemen, we made it. Enjoy the college football this weekend. Enjoy the preseason game on Sunday. And then we're home free. Everybody have a great weekend. Stillman & Company. We'll see you all Monday at